College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and a break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
All right, let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. We will break down the American Conference, the AAC, from soup to nuts during this podcast. In just a little bit, we're going to be joined by Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin, who is fresh off a sixth consecutive NCAA tournament appearance. Wants you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes and also check us out on Facebook. We have a College Hoops Today fan page, and also send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N, and I want to let you know that we are brought to you by Harry's. Stop compromising on your shave and get started with Harry's today. For far too long, you've either paid too much for a comfortable shave or you've settled for a low price but low quality razor. Harry's offers something you've never had before: a great shave at a fair price. Good shave, good price. It's simple. Get the best of both with Harry's. As you've heard me talk about on the podcast before, I enjoy a great shave with Harry's every morning. The blades are super sharp and provide a close, comfortable shave. Plus, their moisturizing shaving cream is great. Harry's starter set is a great option. For just $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shave cream, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of the show. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with promo code HOOPS. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman Set. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. Enter code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S, at checkout to get $5 off and help support the show. Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today. And now that we've all got everybody set for your shaving needs, let's shift to college basketball. Now, as I talked about last week, we are going to break down one major conference from soup to nuts each week throughout the rest of the summer. Last week we did the Atlantic 10. This week we are doing the American Conference. And when I think of the American Conference, a conference that has been in existence right now for three seasons, it reminds me a lot of The Godfather Part 3. We're still trying to figure it out. Because the teams in the American Conference were the teams that were left behind when the old Big East saw a large portion of its teams go to the ACC, and then saw the remaining teams after that add Creighton, Butler, and Xavier and form their own new league that features 10 teams. So my question right now for this American Conference is, what is the identity? I don't think there is one. That's the negative. But the positive right now for the American Conference, you have two programs, UConn and Cincinnati, that are set to anchor this league from a national perspective. And if you don't think that this has become one of the better rivalries in college basketball, you're absolutely kidding yourself. Because I looked this up and I went over the numbers just a couple of days ago. Since the creation of the American Conference prior to the 2013 season, UConn and Cincinnati have played 9 times. UConn leads the series 5-4, and UConn has outscored Cincinnati in those 9 games, 565-564. That shows you how competitive this rivalry has become. And again, this year, as you look into the crystal ball, both UConn and Cincinnati should have a chance to play the majority of the 2016-17 season with a number next to their name as a ranked team. Now, that's a positive. What's a negative? The returning regular season champion, the Temple Owls, who somehow, after a 4-5 start, found a way to win the American Conference outright last year, are experiencing Murphy's Law at the highest of levels. Temple right now has two starters, Josh Brown and Trey Lowe, out nursing injuries. Trey Lowe has a spine injury that he suffered at the end of last season. Josh Brown has a torn Achilles tendon. I was down at Temple in North Philadelphia last week for a practice. There is no sign that either of those players will be available to play next season. What does that mean? It means one of the strongest brands for the American Conference, Temple, a team that won the conference regular season title last year, is shorthanded. Another thing we need to look at when you look at some of the brand name programs in this league, SMU has been a constant the past couple of years under Larry Brown. They had one of the great college players, in my opinion, that we've seen in recent memory in Nick Moore. Not a guy that's necessarily going to be somebody who plays in the NBA, but the type of college player who seems like he's in college for 7 or 8 years when he's really just in for 4 or 5. They lose Nick Moore. What happens to SMU? SMU, in my opinion, is going to play positionless basketball, the type of basketball we saw the Golden State Warriors play the last couple of seasons, because they are not going to play like with a traditional big man like they have the couple of years with Yannick Morera and Marcus Kennedy and Jordan Tolbert. You are going to see SMU spend a lot of time with Ben Moore and Shemi Ojeleye, the Duke transfer up front, and you're going to see a lot of Shake Milton, the sophomore who averaged over 10 points a game last year, really at the epicenter of everything this team does offensively. I don't think SMU is going to play the same way with the same type of high-low action we saw the last couple years. I think they're going to be hard to guard. They're not, in my opinion, as good as we've seen the past couple of years. Now, another team that was really coming on strong last year and won a game at UConn late in the season is the Houston Cougars. To me right now, Houston looks like they're a big man short from being a lock NCAA tournament team. But in terms of returning perimeters right now, Houston's is as good as anybody. Houston might have the best pure point guard in the American Conference in Galen Robinson, the best pure scorer in the American Conference in Rob Gray, and the best two-way wing in Damian Dotson. So Houston, to me, is going to be in the mix at the top of this conference. And then there is a new feel around the Memphis Tigers because we have Tubby Smith coaching Memphis, a Memphis team that, again, does not have as good of a roster as we've seen the past couple of years, but you've got, hands down, the best player in the American Conference in Dedrick Lawson, who averaged, 15, 9, and 1.5 blocks as a freshman. So I think there's pieces right now for this conference to have a couple of teams that have a chance to join Cincinnati and UConn as NCAA tournament teams, but there's still no real identity to me when you look at this conference. There's still no constants other than UConn and Cincinnati. Will Tulsa be able to rebound with Junior Itu, the transfer from Rutgers? Can Temple weather the storm? And how will SMU respond to playing a different type of basketball? These are all things we're going to get into. We're going to break the conference down even more from soup to nuts. But coming up next, Mick Cronin joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Cincinnati is on the heels of its 6th consecutive appearance in the NCAA tournament, and our head coach Mick Cronin joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein right now. And Mick, I have to imagine that you've had several difficult losses in your career that stand out, but where does the defeat against St. Joe's rank in your mind now that you've had a few months to reflect?
John, I thought you were going to talk about summer recruiting, how things are going. You got to bring up getting beat by 0.1 seconds. I love you, man.
Well, look, we're trying to create compelling content right here.
I got you, man. You know what happens? So I'm going into my 14th year as a head coach. The longer you do this, and you're fortunate to have some stability in your profession, what I've learned is it becomes about the kids. So I don't rank it. I haven't even thought about it in the context of how tough it might have been for myself or my staff. But it's just a tough way for your seniors to end their career to lose by 0.1 seconds, by a fingernail, on a play where the player clearly got fouled on the dunk, which probably slowed him up and caused it to be late. But that's just how I look at it. It's just a tough pill to swallow for those seniors and for the kids in general. So obviously for the returning guys, you got to hope it's what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That's kind of the way I look at our season last year.
What do you say to your team after that?
It was tough. I was at a loss for words for about 5 minutes. We went in there, and I try to always think, John, if I was one of these kids sitting here right now, what would I want my coach to say? Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? If I was one of these guys right now, I don't really want to hear anybody tell me everything's going to be okay. I want to be mad right now. So I gave him a little bit of time to cool off, and you know, and ultimately, what my message to them was: they need to be proud of the way they handled unbelievable beats, and through officiating, through tough luck, through every possible way you could have a tough beat. And they stayed together when a lot of teams could have fell apart. They stayed together. They continued the tradition of our program of making the NCAA tournament. They handled themselves like a winning team handles themselves. And that's, I think that's not valued enough in today's society and sports. That's what I told them I was most proud of them.
You know, Mick, too, you look at the game before that in the conference tournament against Connecticut, Jalen Adams makes a 70-foot shot to tie the game and send it to overtime. So you back-to-back had two brutal losses in probably the most excruciating way. How much, in your mind, was that a microcosm of last season?
Pretty much it. That was kind of our season in a nutshell, stuff like that happening. Because you got to compound in there the injuries that this group of kids dealt with. So you throw in not only the tough losses, a guy making a 75-footer that's counted good, should have been after the buzzer. Throw in Gary Clark blowing his ankle out the day before that game in practice. Quadri Moore having the game of his life. Against St. Joe's and blowing his ankle out before the end of the first half. Shaq Thomas losing him for the year, multiple injuries. Just one of those years, John, one of those years for the Bearcats last year. But, again, I think it's how you handle tough things that happen to you in life, especially in sports where you're trying to teach kids about being able to handle tough things. That hopefully it'll be valuable for the kids down the road that they were able to go through some things like that, stay together and stay positive. I was really, really proud of them. Not happy that's what our season boiled down to, but really proud of the way the guys handled everything.
Cincinnati's Mick Cronin here on the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. You use the term tough things, and you had some tough things and some tough choices to make since the end of last season. You were the target for the vacancy at UNLV. During that process, did you ever wake up and think that you would be coaching UNLV this next season?
Well, first of all, that wasn't a tough thing. There's guys in our business that had to deal with some tough things in the spring, and that's namely some coaches losing their jobs and the ridiculous climate that we have to deal with, whether it's the NBA and guys at winning records and lose their job, or in college, guys that run clean programs, do everything the right way, but maybe win not quite enough. But get the quick trigger, or the Ziggy, as they used to say, and are out of a job. You know, so those are the guys I feel for, Johnny. For me, I'm fortunate. You know, I had an opportunity. If I wanted to be the coach at UNLV, it was pretty public that I had that opportunity. I thank the president, the athletic director, and the people there that they thought highly enough of me to consider me for their position. But ultimately, I went through a soul-searching process. And I'm at the job I belong at, and I'm very, very fortunate to have the job I have. So I realize there's a lot of coaches that do great jobs, but maybe don't catch the breaks that I've caught. I just try to stay humble about it, keep the right attitude that you better keep working, because you're always a bad break away from suffering the tough thing of losing your job in our business, John. I'm not one of those guys, you know me, I don't walk around with any type of arrogance about it. You know, I'm a humble guy, and I realize there's a lot of good coaches out there.
Mick, now, you've been offered other jobs in the past, but, you know, you actually physically got on a plane this time and went to Las Vegas to meet with UNLV about this vacancy. What happened that made you know internally that it was the right thing to come back to Cincinnati and not take the UNLV job? What happened during the process?
Well, I had never been through the process. What I told myself was, you know, after having the arterial dissection and sitting out the previous year and having to be out and go through some things, when you go through a life-threatening medical condition, it changes you. You realize you're not going to live forever, John. And maybe in the past, sometimes my answer would just be, no. I said, you know, 10 years of loyal service at Cincinnati, we've had a great run. The program's in obviously way better shape than the mess I inherited in 06. So I felt good about that. And I just felt I owed it to myself. If a school really thought that highly of me and pursued me the way I was being pursued, that, you know what, it's not going to be the end of the world to look at the situation. Obviously, I didn't want it to get public, but that's hard to do at this time. Guys like you are too good at your job. So, you know, I did not want it to be a public situation. That I regret. But, you know, we are people. You know, we have lives and we have things to consider about the way we want to live the next 10 years of our life if we're fortunate enough to have it. And that's just kind of how I looked at it. And it wasn't that big of a deal and you know, wasn't a tough decision by any stretch. For me, it was just looking at an opportunity and making a decision on whether I wanted to accept it or not. And obviously, I decided to stay at Cincinnati, and I'm happy to be the coach at Cincinnati.
How has the Cincinnati job changed since the transition to the American Conference from the old Big East?
Very different from the recruiting dynamic. I would say, you know, we're probably not as accepted, may not be the right term, but maybe not as, we don't get as much exposure in the East, which obviously you could probably even have a better opinion on that than I would, because you live in New York. So it changes your recruiting dynamic. What kids are going to look at you because of your conference. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, recruiting and scheduling are the lifebloods of your program. So the change in conference has definitely affected our recruiting, and we've had to adjust on the fly with that. And then obviously scheduling. So your non-conference schedule, doing everything you can to stay nationally relevant with the television networks and make sure you're playing enough quality games that you maybe would have gotten in the old Big East, which is now like the ACC. You got to make sure you're still getting those quality games because recruits want to play in big-time games on television.
What's the goal at Cincinnati, Mick? Because, I mean, you've proven that you're a perennial NCAA tournament team. When you go out for your private walks and you smoke a cigar, you're sitting by your pool, what is the goal? How do you accelerate, really, the ceiling at Cincinnati, or I should say elevate the ceiling?
Yes, yeah, and that's a media term and a media way of looking at it. And you know me, I'm not getting on. It's just we all come from different walks of and corners and viewpoints of this whole thing. And I don't look at it like that at all. I live year to year, and I said this earlier, John. The older I get, the more I do this. I'm appreciative because I realize how many great coaches and basketball minds there are out there that don't have my job or a job comparable. So when I'm sitting around, I'm fortunate. I feel fortunate, number one. Number two, I think about how do I help Troy Copain become a better player so he can achieve his dreams of having a professional career, going to a Final Four during his college career. You know, how do I get Kyle Washington to stay out of foul trouble this year? It's going to be a huge factor for us. You know, I don't really think about ceilings and big pictures and sit around thinking about the macro angle of it all. I'm really more in tune with how do I get Gary Clark to come out of his shell and embrace trying to dominate basketball games. Because when you really sit back and think about it, John, that's what my players deserve. I should be just thinking about this team, this year, these players, how do I help them? I can't control what conference we're in. I can't control certain dynamics of college sports and things kind of shifted that have put Cincinnati where we're at. What I can control is pushing forward for our new arena. I think that kind of maybe answers your question a little bit. I think that's something that's got to happen at our school for men's basketball to maybe elevate our ceiling or however you want to look at it. We've got to have our new arena finished. I'm pretty confident that we'll have all the money raised this year and be able to start construction on that when our season's over. That'll be a big factor. It'll help because it's going to help our recruiting. But the way it is now, John, we got to do it in a model from outside of one of the sexier leagues, and you got to do it through creative recruiting and non-conference scheduling and kids that really want to put the time in and get better. Because every guy that becomes a great player wasn't a top 10 recruit coming out. You don't have to be a five-star recruit to be a great player.
Cincinnati's Mick Cronin joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Now, one thing that has really, let's just say, came out of nowhere, I think, with this league is the rivalry with Connecticut, because you guys played them in the NCAA tournament in 2011, and you guys had good games in the old Big East, but I think this league has given your rivalry with Connecticut a platform right now where it's become one of the more underrated rivalries in the sport. What has it been like to trade blows with the Huskies the last couple of years, the way you've traded blows with them?
Well, it's been great, first of all, because Kevin's a friend. I have great respect for their players and their coach and their former coach and how they play the game. Neither one of us had a hand in the conference shakeup or breakup, and we still play Big East games from the old days. So that's really the truth of it, the way to say it. And we were able to, and we both kind of hang on to that with a lot of pride. Both programs have a lot of pride in who they are, and the kids take it to heart, trying to uphold the tradition of the Cincinnati program, or obviously the UConn program, and it lends to great games, and I'm sure for our fans, it's they've enjoyed the development of the rivalry. I think it was easy to see coming, once the league shakeup happened, because you could kind of see where we were both having success in the Big East and coming to the American, that there was going to be a little bit of battle for supremacy between both schools. And it's been extremely healthy. That's what I love about the rivalry. It's been unbelievably a positive thing for the American Conference as well.
Mick, is there better camaraderie amongst the coaches in this league than maybe the old Big East? Because you guys need all each other to win. You need everybody around you to win. So is there more texting? Is there more rooting for each other than maybe there would be in a Power 5 league?
You know, I think that the issues are different. I mean, even in the old Big East, which again I would say now is like the ACC, they're sitting around their meetings talking about how do they get 10, 11, 12 teams in every year, which is what we used to do. Mm-hmm. In our league, we're talking about the same thing. How do we get more teams in? So, you know, we have 11 basketball playing, you know, so how do we make sure we're getting 5, 6 in? And we have members that came from Conference USA and needed more funding for their basketball program, for their scheduling, for their recruiting, more support. And that's what we talk about. So if you want to call that camaraderie, it's still, at the end of the day, it helps us all. But we definitely spend a lot of our time talking about how do we help make sure that we have no team in our league with a RPI low enough that it would hurt the rest of the members.
In terms of outside the league, I know you spent times with certain people, you know, in your circle, and one of those people is, you know, Rick Pitino, who was your mentor, along with Bob Huggins, when you worked for each of them at Cincinnati and Louisville. What has it been like for you personally to watch Coach Pitino, what he's had to go through over the last 9 months or so?
Well, again, he never ceases to amaze me with his resiliency as a person. You know, in 2001, I was fortunate that he hired me when he left Boston, and literally took me into his family, and I spent a couple weeks with him here in the off season at his home and then his daughter's wedding. And it's just amazing how tough of a person he is, how resilient he is. And if he's able to, one thing about Rick Pitino, he's able to block out noise better than anybody I've ever been around professionally. Now, that may be through experience. When you're the coach of the Knicks and you're the coach of the Celtics, you get a lot of practice at that, I would say, John.
Yeah.
And he's perfected it. He's also, through tragedy in life, perfected what's important. That you make mistakes, but what's important is you love your family and you enjoy your friends and your family. And no matter how many games you win, it's not more important than being a good friend and being a good member of your family. So I thank God every day for our relationship, because the man's got it in perspective, and he deals with adversity probably better than most people you'll meet in life. So he's the last guy you got to worry about. Louisville, as long as he's at Louisville, he'll weather the storm. It'll all be fine. They'll find a way to get through it. He does not let it affect his focus from coaching and recruiting. And it's amazing how he's able to do that. I think, that could sidetrack a lot of people. And you lose focus in our business and you're headed for disaster quick. He's really able to beat off anybody that tries to detract him from his job. And it's been impressive. But just to really answer your question, obviously, for those of us close to him, it's been tough to see him go through this, because we know what he's about. He did not have any idea of what went on at Louisville, John. I mean, no idea of the stuff that some people seem to have maybe been involved in behind his back. And he would have fired everybody on the spot. That's why there was painstaking measures taken to keep any of that from him. And anybody that played or worked for him knows that he would have fired everybody. It's tough that it's been tagged to his name, but, like Coach and I talk about, when you're the head coach, especially nowadays at Coach Control, we're all responsible for everything that goes on under us. So, I would look for him to be reinvigorated to make sure that their program gets the ship righted, and he ends his run there the way he wants to end it. And that'll be his thank you to that city for what they've done for his family and his life.
Well, you mentioned, the end of his run. How much longer could you see him coaching? Because everybody thinks they're going to retire at a certain age, and then they realize what retirement is, and they want to keep working.
Well, you look around our business, you see guys going strong like Rick Pitino, Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim, Coach K, those type of guys, Bob Huggins, and I think those guys have earned the right that, as long as they enjoy what they do, I think the kids they coach are better off that they don't retire. So, you never know. I would say health is always a factor. Family situations are always a factor. I also think it's a bit of a boxing syndrome. I do believe that, John. It's tough to walk away. I think you got to admit that. It really is tough to walk away. It was tough for Bo Ryan to finally pull the trigger. It was tough for Jim Calhoun to finally pull the trigger. I mean, people that are wildly successful and unbelievably committed to something every day, extremely hard to just walk away. I can't imagine, John, what Kobe Bryant's going through right now. A guy that sure. committed and task-oriented every day to his career, and now he's got to figure out what to do every day when he wakes up. So not easy. I think a lot of guys are going to go kicking and screaming. You and I are younger guys. We sit there and say, what are they doing? They got all the money in the world. They should be at the beach. But not a lot to do at the beach.
No. Blank pages are no good. And you mentioned exactly. The term, walking away. You had to walk away about a year and a half ago from your team for different reasons. It's human nature to forget that when we feel healthy, but how often do you, driving to work or just getting ready for a task, remind yourself that if you're healthy, it's a great day?
I tell you, the biggest thing for me, John, is being cognizant of your health, but others' health, and the issues that other people go through. So when I hear of something that happened to somebody, anything health related, or there's a tragic depth somewhere. I'm extremely in tune to it. I pay way more attention than I used to pay to it because it brings me right back to, hey, you know, how fortunate I am that I got through my arterial dissection episode and was able to go back to my normal life. So it's a daily thing, and anything could trigger it. You know, usually it's reading the newspaper, or watching the news, or hearing a story from a friend, or, you know, going, obviously following John Rothstein on Twitter and the internet, because you got all the scoops, man. So whenever I hear that stuff, though, seriously, it brings you back to reality and what's important in life. And the great Hyman Roth said it, you know, good health, most important thing.
No question. Cincinnati's Mick Cronin joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. There are eight teams, I believe, in Division I that have played in six straight NCAA tournaments. Cincinnati's one of them, and the backbone of that has been defense. But studying your personnel now, you start to think about the other end of the floor more when you think about your team for next season. Do you think now the team you're about to coach has a chance to be the best offensive team that you've had at Cincinnati?
Could be for sure. Especially they're not playing in the Big East from 08, you know, 06 to 2013. You know, so some people got to realize, like, when we went to the Sweet 16 in 2012, we played a four guard offense and we could really score. The problem is we played against six of the top 15 defenses in the country in our league.
Right.
It's a little bit skewed from the old days of how hard it was to score in that conference. But when you look at the makeup, what I would say is of our team, when you have veteran guard play, you're set up for success. And at the same time, we have two forwards in Kyle Washington and Gary Clark that both can play basketball. They can score the ball. They can rebound the ball. They can make plays. They can get to the foul line. They can shoot. They're not just a one-dimensional low post guy. They're really basketball players at 6'8", 6'10", which is going to allow us to look more fluid offensively just because of the personnel like you're alluding to. So it's exciting. I'm looking forward to getting ready, coaching those guys. We've been able to do a lot of stuff this summer that we haven't been able to do with our motion offense. I kid around with my buddy Mike Bray. We look like Notre Dame in practice. You know, everybody's shooting and passing. He loves that. He says he's going to come down. He wants to see if it's really true. He wants to watch practice. So I'm hoping to get Mike Brain as my motion offense consultant.
It's a good scoop right there, Mick. You know, because when I think about offense in your last game, I think about the fact that there was a guy who was picked 21st in the NBA draft last week, DeAndre Bembry, and there was a guy who went toe-to-toe to him from your team in Jacob Evans. Jacob Evans had 26-9 in an NCAA tournament game, and you could really see him starting to take the next step. What are your goals and what are your hopes for him as a sophomore?
Well, you said the next step. And the next step, John, is, first of all, Jacob's got great talent. He's got a tremendous upside as a player. He's got to shoot a higher percentage like most young players do. Got to get to the foul line more. He's a great free throw shooter. And the next step then becomes when you creep up the scouting report, it becomes a little harder to get points. You know, and we played St. Joe's. DeAndre Bembry guarded Troy Copain, and that was a problem for Troy Copain because he was a two-way player. That's why he's the 21st pick in the draft. So, you know, for Jacob, moving up that scouting report, you get a lot more attention. People being a little more physical with you. You don't get quite the looks, the easy looks that you used to get. But I think he's up to the task. He's a guy that's going to continue to ascend in college basketball. And he's one of the reasons you're talking about the potency of our team on the offensive end, because you got a guy like Jacob that can, his point guard skills at 6'6". So I just got to get him. John, one big thing, to be a real scorer, you got to get some easy twos and you got to get free throws. You know, you can't just score on the night that you make shots. Those guys are called shooters.
Right.
The real scorers, the guys that are, for us a couple of years ago, as you know, Sean Kilpatrick, the guys who get themselves layups and free throws. And Jacob Evans can do it because he's got the ball handling skills and the one-on-one ability to be that kind of guy.
You know, you mentioned Sean Kilpatrick, and you have cautioned me, and other coaches have cautioned me to really hold back from overrating freshmen, but you're going to bring in a freshman this year in Jaron Cumberland, who is highly touted and, you know, has put up numbers, obviously, in an AAU setting, which is in a college setting. But compared to other elite freshmen that you've brought in the Cincinnati, you know, Lance Stevenson, Sean Kilpatrick, other guys, where does he rank in terms of his readiness to play?
Well, physically, Jaron's ready to play because he's 6'5", 220 as a freshman. And he's not going to get pushed around by any stretch. And he's played high-level basketball in the summers, being in the global games and some of the more elite events that went on around the country. He's a freight train in transition, and he's a shot maker and a playmaker on offense. How well is he going to be able to guard somebody? All the little things that go on with a freshman are going to go on. And how good Jaron Cumberland will be end up to being Jaron Cumberland. It's all up to these kids. You know, I think some of them, their talent's so great, it supersedes the talent they're playing against, and they're able to dominate and until they get to the pros, and then they have to have work ethic. The normal college guy coming in, John, Jaron Cumberland, Sean Kilpatrick, Jacob Evans, guys at Cincinnati. It takes some time because they got to adjust. You can't just be talented. You've got to put the work in. And that's what Jaron's going to go through, just like all the really good freshmen. There may be a guy like a Josh Jackson this year at Kansas. It's just so good that he'll be gone before you even know it. Because he's just such a stud athlete. But Jaron will go through the process. I like the fact that he is a very, very gifted basketball player. Don't have to teach him how to find the open man, and he's not afraid to take the big shot. Just got to polish his game up, put in the time, put in the work, but he's going to have a great career. He's going to be a great Bearcat. He's a big cornerstone recruit for us.
See, Mick, you thought I was going to ask you about July recruiting. Look at all we covered.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Am I going to see you on the road?
I will see you on the road, my man, at some point. Safe travels, and I'll be sure to link up in July.
Get out here. Earn your money, my man. Get out here. I look forward to seeing you.
You got Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin here on the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I'd like to thank Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Also, want you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. Give us a like. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also, check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. We are now going to go through the American Conference from soup to nuts. We first start out with some power rankings.
John's American Power Rankings.
Number one is the UConn Huskies. Kevin Ollie's team returns Jalen Adams, a breakout star at the point guard position. He will be joined by a McDonald's All-American and Al Tariq Gilbert, and Rodney Purvis will round out that perimeter at the three spot. Want to keep an eye on Terry Larrier, the VCU transfer, at the four for UConn. Cincinnati is two. Houston is three. A name to keep an eye on for the Cougars, Devin Davis, a junior college power forward who started his career at Indiana. SMU 4, Memphis is 5, Tulsa is 6. If Junior Itu, the Rutgers transfer, can play at an all-league level, Frank Haith might have two all-league players when you consider Itu and Patrick Burt. Temple at 7, South Florida at 8, Orlando Antigua quietly doing a really nice job building talent in Tampa. A name to keep an eye on, Geno Thorpe, a transfer from Penn State. Central Florida is 9, East Carolina 10, Tulane is 11. Now time for the American Conference preseason first team.
John's American preseason first team.
We start with Troy Copain from Cincinnati. We then shift to Houston for Damian Dotson. Like I said earlier, the best two-way wing in the American Conference. Rodney Purvis from UConn is the small forward. Gary Clark, the best defensive player last year in the American Conference, is the four. And at the five, Dedrick Lawson from Memphis. And that leads us to the American Conference Preseason Player of the Year.
John's American Preseason Player of the Year.
And it's Dedrick Lawson from Memphis. The pro for Memphis right now, the positive, you have Dedrick Lawson and Tubby Smith. The negative, who is going to play point guard for this team that I still think has a chance to play in the 2017 NCAA tournament? And key freshmen are always at the epicenter of any college basketball preview. And here's five impact freshmen to keep an eye on in the American Conference.
John's freshman to watch in the American.
I mentioned Al Tariq Gilbert from UConn. There's two others that the Huskies are bringing in that were ranked in the top 100. Vance Jackson and Juwan Durham. Another freshman to keep an eye on, Jaron Cumberland. He will play for Cincinnati. A lot of people in the Queen City are already comparing Cumberland to Sean Kilpatrick, a potential starter for Mick Cronin. Troy Baxter from South Florida, another one that is on my list of impact freshmen for the American Conference next year, was a four-star recruit out of high school. Now that we've given you some impact freshmen in the American Conference, let's look at five under-the-radar freshmen in the American Conference heading into 16-17.
John's American Sleeper.
Mamadou Diarra, another UConn prospect, tops this list. Nasir Brooks, who's headed to Cincinnati, played in the We Are One AAU program. Nasir Brooks could be a big-time backup up front for Cincinnati behind Kyle Washington and Gary Clark. Alani Moore for Temple. I wrote about Alani Moore this past week for CBSSports.com. With Josh Brown's future uncertain at point guard, Alani Moore could be the guy that's the most important piece for Temple for the 16-17 season. Fran Dunphy needs him to have a Juan Fernandez-like impact at the point guard position. For those who don't know who Juan Fernandez is, he is one of few freshmen who were able to step into the lineup for a Fran Dunphy coach team and have a major impact. Travis Atson for Tulsa and Deshaun McDowell from SNU round out five under-the-radar freshmen for the American Conference. Now let's look at five impact transfers.
John's transfers to watch in the American.
Terry Larrier at UConn. He transfers from VCU. He's a top 40 recruit out of high school. He will probably start at the four for Kevin Ollie's team, I would think. Kyle Washington from Cincinnati. Again, played some spot minutes for NC State. Didn't get consistent minutes, but a big-time offensive player. Shemi Ojale for SMU absolutely will be on this list. A lot of people in the Dallas area think he will lead the Ponies in scoring next season. Junior Itu from Tulsa and Devin Davis from Houston round out the list. Now we look at five breakout players to keep an eye on in the American Conference.
John's American breakout players for next season.
I start with Jacob Evans at Cincinnati. Had 26 points and 9 rebounds last year when Cincinnati lost to St. Joseph's in the NCAA tournament, a big-time offensive talent. Jalen Adams from UConn. Galen Robinson for Houston. Remember, Galen Robinson had to split time with Ronnie Johnson last year with the ball in his hands for Houston. Ronnie Johnson has now moved on to Auburn. LeVan Shiz Alston for Temple. Look, somebody's going to have to score the ball for Temple out of the backcourt. Shiz Alston is my pick. And also KJ Lawson from Memphis. Because Dedrick Lawson was so good and so talented last year for Memphis, people forget that KJ Lawson, his brother, another top 50 recruit out of high school, was injured for the majority of the season. This is another all-conference player that Tubby Smith can lean on. That is the American Conference breakdown from Soup to Nuts. Next week, we'll be back previewing the Big East Conference for 16-17. We will be back right here. Same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.